You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
You know, we get a lot of sci-fi movies on the Screener Squad. Most of them are kind of low budget, but this one might be the most bleak sci-fi future I've ever seen. A future where even the sex dolls are shitty.
I'm not sure why Blade Runner 2049 needed another prequel, but...
There was a first one?
All those little anime shorts.
But we are not talking about Blade Runner. We are talking about LX2048, which I'm still not sure if the year is supposed to be 2048. They might have said that at some point. I wasn't paying that much attention at the beginning. But I am Ben. With me, as you've heard, is Jordan.
Hello.
Santiago.
Howdy, everybody.
And Tessa.
Hello, hello.
And Jordan, do you mind giving us the synopsis?
Okay. James Darcy, who you may know from Agent Carter as Jarvis, plays a dying man in the not-too-distant future of 2048, implied, at least. And, yeah, he's kind of got a shitty life, separated from his wife, trying to maintain a relationship with his kids and such. And he is trying to save the company he's working for from going completely under. And an unfortunate event in this future, the sun has become so toxic that no one can really be out during the daytime.
There's a lot of clones and anti-clonism going on in here.
Yeah, there is a clear racism allegory going on here. And I would say, oh, hey, it's so toxic to go outside. That's in no way problematic to what's going on today. Oh, God.
Super relatable to everybody in California right now, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
This movie, it has a lot of great and interesting ideas about, with the Blade Runner allegory of being about, you know, the value of life and life after being cloned and stuff like that. It hits into the equilibrium, like take your pills and be happy in 1984 thing. And it kind of tries to wrap it all around. A lot of the time it's in an okay, the solid package. And sometimes it's like you kind of are just really jerking yourself off over how clever you think you are in this script.
It was up its own ass a little bit with really kind of boring dialogue, just going off on tangents that are like things we've heard like a million times before. You know, there were moments, it just kind of changes gears a lot on the type of sci-fi film that it is. It can't really settle on one thing. It starts with like being about the environment, and then it's about virtual reality, and then it's about clones, you know, taking over your life when you die, and just all this, that, and the other. It just kind of like jumps around being about different topics in sci-fi. It's just all kind of mashed together, and I don't think it's quite flows together. It's a very crudely made patchwork quilt of sci-fi tropes and themes. At the very beginning, when he was in VR, but he physically went into his work when he could have worked remotely, it kind of reminded me of that Garfield Without Garfield comic strip where John Arbuckle seems like he's slowly going insane.
Oh, wow.
The bit of him arguing in a boardroom meeting that you couldn't see anyone else, I thought was actually pretty fun and cool, like the thing for sci-fi, but it doesn't seem to ever connect those dots to anything more interesting than everybody looks at their phone too much. My kids are too busy on their phones.
Well, that actually was one of the stronger points of the film for me, where you see James Darcy pretty much act without anyone there. And honestly, it's really good. Like, I was kind of captivated.
I agree. I thought his acting was pretty like compelling and like funny. Like, I don't know if that was intentional, but this movie was hilarious. Like, I do think that throughout the film, like, there was laugh out loud moments, but I mean, that I think they all started right around the time when he's like, they're showing him talking to his children. I thought that scene was hilarious, and it just like kind of went on from there. But I do agree that this guy is kind of just like, I'm surprised that he's like the only person experiencing this like malaise, depression, whatever you want to call that he's going through in light of like society pretty much being immersed into virtual reality slash like clones slash like sex slash video games. It's a pretty close reality to the one that we live in, just like slightly into a bleaker future that maybe is trying to say something about society, but it's kind of doing it tongue in cheek in a way that I thought was funny. But maybe they realized this movie was funny like halfway through making it and then we're just like rolling with it. I feel like that is a possibility.
It is written and directed by a director that I honestly think has always been very interesting. It doesn't do that much. Guy Moshe or Moshe, I don't know exactly pronounce that last name, but he's the guy who wrote and directed Bunraku, which is a fantastic movie. It's not brilliant, but it's such a fun action movie. And one of those ones with Josh Hartnett, where it's like people are sleeping on Josh Hartnett a lot of the time. And I love that movie. And I think I see some of those elements here where he has that sense of pacing and humor where I don't think it ever slows down. I think it keeps up a good pace. It's just, it kind of loses itself in its plot, kind of lingers on things. Like his wife or ex-wife or semi-ex-wife is so just cartoonishly dickheaded to him. And they try to play it up as like, well, he's not on his medication and she's disconnected from emotions, but it's like, no, she literally seems like malevolently out to get him in a lot of cases.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where it's like, this is not a naturally divorced couple. This is movie divorce, where it's like, you fucking bitch, you don't care about the children. And yes, yeah, she is pretty much an actual cartoon villain, which says a lot when suddenly Delroy Lindo appears as the possible actual cartoon villain. But
I think that's his whole job in this movie, is to be pretty cool and have fun with it. It's like, I love you, Delroy Lindo, but what's the point of your character? Like, he really adds nothing. He pops out of nowhere. He's supposed to be like a negative for a moment, and like, but then it's just him goofing off for like the next two times he shows up in the movie. And I'm just like, look, you tried something here. You didn't have it. There's not any weight to this, except for Delroy Lindo adds so much charisma to these scenes that you can't not like these moments. They're just not great.
And that just speaks to how goddamn amazing Delroy Lindo is.
He is one of those guys that shows up and just acts as himself, and it's always amazing.
Yeah, no. He comes in like a actual force of nature and is like, alright, well, I'm gone. But wait, can you stay?
Please don't go. Don't leave us. Don't leave us here. With this lengthy, domestic, messy divorce slash snuff film.
When it gets to the second half of the movie, it kind of just belabors all of those points. It loses Delroy Lindo when he came in and reinvigorated so much life to it. James Darcy's doing all he can to add stuff to it, but it's literally a bottle episode of him in this one apartment that they designed, which is fine. That's, you can do bottle episode, you know, sci-fi movie, but sure. It just, you know, lingers on this weird attempt to be existential and deep when it's not adding anything to any of those moments. And when you get to this part with him, like with his AI lover, it's like, okay, cool. You clearly didn't have enough time and budget to finish this arc like you wanted to. You should have maybe just dropped it because there wasn't any more life to it. You know, it would have been better if Delroy's character just lied to him at that point, because when it comes back around, it does nothing. When you finally get to the clone stuff Jordan's been talking about, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's very predictable, I think, in a lot of ways. But again, James Darcy is just killing it in those scenes, to the point where it's like, I love seeing you play off yourself and what they're trying to do with it. And it's actually kind of great.
And they even make the obvious joke of, okay, well, are our dicks the same? Which I thought was going to be grossly predictable, but they actually do make a good bit out of it.
I mean, his wife made a good bit out of it. I don't know.
I mean, that was the thing. It was like, there was the whole awkwardness of, you know, them getting to make tweaks and changes to their clones, their spouse's clone, to make them better. You know, this whole, like, afterlife insurance where you get another go at your marriage or whatever. It was just kind of this awkward moment. It's like, well, what would you change about me? Well, nothing, babe. Of course not. You know? And you're like, bullshit.
oh, you're so perfect, but if you like went up a couple cups inside.
Yeah.
It was that terrible thing of, yeah, and there's also this ominous, you know, all world government that might be evil. It's like, okay, but you kind of hint that they might be. And then the worst is, hey, we let you pick what your spouse's clone looks like. It's like, that's not that evil unless you're like trying to set up a Jerry Springer show situation. And then that's just for profit. But it's not what they're going for.
I'm in love with my wife's clone.
I did want to say this movie, when I saw the trailer, reminded me a lot of a movie. I don't know if any of you else saw it. Antiviral by Brandon Cronenberg, David Cronenberg's son. There's the trailer made me think a lot about it. And I thought the movie wouldn't as much. But suddenly, as it goes on, you really start to. Basically, it's like a semi-dark satirical future, which is clear that he's David Cronenberg's son by that point, where pretty much this guy is like, he's a cloning scientist, and he also is making money on the black market by cloning celebrities, because they're cloning meat to eat, and he's cloning the meat of celebrities that people want to eat, their favorite celebrity.
What?
Like buying Twitch streamer girl bathwater. It's the future version of that.
That's buck wild. Yeah,
it's really dark and weird, but it's all about that, you know, what is the real person and the existentialness of it. And it's kind of in that same vein with as this movie, where it's like you have a lot of interesting ideas you're trying to explore, you're getting deep, you have a just dark enough visual style to kind of make it, you know, heavy sci-fi, but you never stick the landing past some of the comedy and the humor. I kind of almost think that one's more interesting, even if I will say that James Darcy is a lot more entertaining on screen than Caleb Landry Jones.
I like what you said about this style, but I just wanted to say that I think that this movie, while I thought this, it looked kind of cheap in some parts, like it almost like carried itself really well, even though it did look that way. Like, I don't know. I really dug the look of this movie. I thought it looked like just the right amount of low budget in my indie sci-fi film as I like there to be.
They use their budget very well. When they add real sci-fi to it, it's like the tubes that people are traveling in. And you can tell if you look hard that they're fake, but they do it on a black background, so it's a dark set. They do the right tricks for budget sci-fi. I can't fault the sci-fi elements in this movie because they all look at least as good as you could hope.
Yeah, and this is honestly one of the better low budget indie sci-fi films I have watched. At least, unlike Archive, this movie's ending doesn't negate itself. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make me think, well, okay, why the fuck did I just watch all this then? Yeah, and I will say, as uneven as this movie can be, I honestly did end up enjoying it. I really thought it was a cerebral kind of film. It really did touch on its subjects and its topics very well. And that it actually had a really well-rounded cast. I do, of course, always wish there's more Delroy Lindo, but, you know, James Darcy actually does very much carry this movie.
I love that scene with him, with, I believe it's Link Hand who plays the officer. It is, there's a point where someone dies that this cop's interviewing him, and it's such a wonderfully awkward scene where the cop doesn't understand his emotions at all. And it just goes so like a roller coaster. I'm like, okay, this is kind of just really simple comedy. And I really think the director overall, Guy Moshe, does a really good job with his directing of his talent. I think part of the issue really is that he wrote this script himself and might have been too in love with his own ideas and his script to let any go. But time and budget caused him to have to trim down enough of them, where there's some things that don't get any closure that need them, and some things that just kind of wrap up into something that feels like a waste of time.
Tim, I love how you managed to compliment and insult this movie at the same time.
Criticism.
Our job is we can criticize things we enjoy. That's the whole shtick.
It is the whole shtick.
Well, Tessa, why don't you roll that into your final thoughts then, since you clearly know the art of criticism.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, as we said, the cast in this was really good, but I, like I said, I feel like it was just a little too all over the place. It couldn't quite figure out what kind of tone it wanted to have and where it wanted to go with the story. I was entertained the whole time. Like, I was on board for the ride. Like, where is this going? So in that regard, it definitely excels. You know, I didn't get bored and want to walk away. You know, they kept me there because I want to know what happened. I still feel like, yeah, they just had too many spinning plates. So I think I would probably give this 6 out of 10 really unfortunate looking sex dolls.
Very much so. Jordan, how about you?
I found myself really enjoying this movie. I thought it had some themes worth exploring, and I thought it explored them well enough. And honestly, the acting is what carries this movie. James Darcy especially. And yeah, Delroy Lindo, as brief as he was, just being like, hey, I'm here. All right, now I'm gone. Bye. And honestly, this movie felt pretty timely given the situation our current world finds itself in. But this movie actually is very entertaining. I especially enjoyed its third act. I thought it was really well constructed and brought everything together. Not perfect in any means, but honestly, I found myself enjoying it way more than I thought. So I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 guitar.
All right, Santi, how about yourself?
I think that Tessa's description of this movie was apt. This movie is like a ride, and that's why I found it really enjoyable. The story does derail, and it does touch on some interesting themes. I thought that, you know, the commentary on our addiction with our devices and just like our general, like, I think the word is like ennui, like the ennui of modernity, which is like people just being listful and sad for, I don't know, just feeling like useless. And I think that, you know, eventually people are going to feel that way, but it won't be just one person. There'll be lots of them. And I think that that's where like this story just doesn't ring true. That being said, I did think it was funny. And as far as like relatableness is concerned, I think people will dig this movie because it's like, you know, it's not good enough to be memorable, but it certainly is good enough to be enjoyable. And I feel like that's a lot of people are asking for these days. And, you know, it does have sex dolls that could have been in Hellraiser. So that definitely is a plus for some people. And the reason I make that reference is because there's genre references all over this film that are comical and silly, and I don't think that this film takes itself too seriously for the second half, maybe for the first half, and for that I give it, you know, brownie points, but not kudos or any commendable things to say, just brownie points. I'm gonna give it 7.5 out of 10 really elaborate fleshlights.
Oh God!
Sorry,
I gotta say, yeah, for myself, this movie has a lot more enjoyment behind it than a lot of its elements would lead you to believe on their own. If you just kind of like break down each section individually, just become like, okay, cool, you had some thoughts there, and they didn't connect as a great sci-fi narrative or anything like that. But there's definitely some real thought that went into what they wanted to say. They try to get to some of them. I think it's just too many ideas in those veins trying to be sandwiched together. And they really needed to, you know, trim that down. You know, the AI girlfriend thing probably didn't need to be as fully part of this movie as it was. How they use Delroy Lindo's character just ends to a dead end, even though he's, as we've said, one of the more interesting characters in this movie. You know, the stuff with his wife, it's like you just get it too cartoony because you're in, like, you never touch on how he's actually disconnected from his kids, even though you're trying to say that. Like, there's just too much going on. But yeah, as we said, the talent is just, it's there. You know, Anna Brewster, who plays his wife, she does have some really fantastic scenes, even if a lot of the other times she's really cartoony. You know, a lot of the side characters, as I said, like the state officer guy who played by Link Hand is a lot of fun. There's this like state clerk guy selling them their insurance played by Jay Hayden, who's like the most plasticky like government officer guy you ever, like when you're like, hey, I'm negotiating a change in my passport. Well, yeah, sit down here. Let me talk to you. This, like that guy.
So smiley. He kind of like, I was like, is he going to be like in the Repo, the Genetic Opera? Like he was almost that plasticky, like you said. Sorry.
No, it's a little bit. And I even like his doctors and like how there's like that disconnect there, even though there's that really weird like scene that you don't know if it's like a dream or what actually happened to him with his therapist. Because by that point in the movie, you have no idea what the fuck is supposed to be the real thing that happened anymore. It loses you. But as we said, it's enjoyable, and it's hard sometimes to find sci-fi that's not like big budget that's this enjoyable. It's not Ex Machina level of low budget enjoyable, but if you're looking for a sci-fi fix, you can do so much worse than this. And especially for a dark comedy sci-fi, it gets the dark comedy correct generally. So overall, I'm going to give it 7.5 boardroom arguments with myself out of 10. I just can't wait for James Darcy to remake Multiplicity.
Yeah, Multiplicity.
All right. Although, to be fair, he can't match the charisma of Michael Keaton.
It's true.
How do you do a sequel to Multiplicity?
It's like the mentally impaired one runs for president.
Trumpuplicity?